Hey, everybody, it's Rich. Welcome, or welcome back, to the Access Church Podcast. Hey, at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you'll find our complete Sunday experience with music, as well as great content for kids and students. Visit accesschurch.com to keep up with everything going on around here at Access, and subscribe to our email list. We'll send you helpful suggestions each week designed to help you make friends, grow in faith, and live with purpose. Most importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Enjoy. Every year at Christmas, my wife Stephanie makes ornaments or buys ornaments for each one of our kids. And she's been doing this for 23 years now, and it's really awesome to have these ornaments that are designed to commemorate something special that happened in their life that year, an accomplishment or an experience or something that really marked that year for them. And when my son Chase, who's now 20, when Chase was 3 years old, Chase loved Spider-Man, and she got him the coolest Spider-Man ornament. And it was just, he just thought it was the coolest thing because he had a Spidey blanket, he had a Spidey jammies. I mean, he just thought Spider-Man was everything. It was an awesome, awesome ornament for him that year. And the next year, Chase was 4, and he put his faith in what Jesus Christ did for him on the cross and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It was by far the biggest moment of the year for him that year. And so that Christmas, Stephanie got him a really beautiful red and silver ornament that spelled out Jesus. Pretty cool, right? Chase didn't think so. Chase opened the ornament and, you know, he's 4. It takes him a minute to kind of sound out the word. And then he just bursts into tears. And he's bawling and he's crying. And poor Stephanie, Stephanie's trying to explain that she got this for him because, you know, this was the year that he put his faith in Jesus. And this was a really big deal. And we wanted to remember what an important moment that was in his life. And Chase says through his tears, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I can already tell this whole Christmas is going to be all about Jesus." And maybe that's how you feel about Easter. Maybe some of you are like, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I bet I know what he's going to preach about today." Matter of fact, some of you are thinking that you even know how the sermon's going to end, right? You're like, I know the spoiler. I know how this whole thing goes today. I know the message. But this message, Easter, and the resurrection of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus is the single most important event in human history. And it is the resurrection of Jesus that gives us a faith. It is the resurrection of Jesus that gives us Christianity. Without the resurrection, we have no hope. Without the resurrection, we have no faith. Without the resurrection, Jesus was just another rabbi gone off the rails. Without the resurrection, Jesus was just another zealot that the Roman Empire had to squash. But the resurrection is what brings us here today, 2,000 years later. And the resurrection is what prompts us all to ask a question. And maybe it's a question that you've never asked. Maybe it's a question that you haven't asked in a really long time since you walked away from church or walked away from faith. Maybe it's a question that you thought about once upon a time, but you haven't given this question enough thought. And I believe that this single question is the most important question you can ask in your life. And the question is this: who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Because the resurrection is what prompts us to ask this question. Without the resurrection, the story of Jesus, really, it's not a story worth telling. It's not a story that lives through the ages. It is the resurrection that has us still talking about Jesus 2,000 years later. And if this is your first time here, or if this is your first time watching, joining us online, we're so grateful that you would be here. We're so grateful that you would watch today. But we want you to know something about our church and our family of churches. And that is that we don't believe that Jesus Christ rose from the dead because the Bible tells us so. It's so much deeper and it's so much more powerful than that. We believe that Jesus Christ rose from the dead because Matthew, a first century follower of Jesus, someone who walked with Jesus and heard what he taught and saw what he did, Matthew wrote down an account of what he had seen and recorded it for all time. And that document has survived antiquity. We believe because Mark was a Gentile. And Mark heard about these things and he interviewed Peter. We believe that Peter was the primary source for Mark who wrote down the things. He sat down with Peter and he got him to tell him, what was Jesus like? What did he do? What did he say? What was the big deal about Jesus? We believe in the resurrection because Luke, a Syrian doctor who came on the scene after these events happened, interviewed the eyewitnesses. And we believe that Mary was one of the primary sources for Luke, that he interviewed Jesus' mother and he got a perspective of Jesus' mother and of so many others that walked with Jesus and that lived with Jesus and that saw what Jesus had done. And Luke, when he wrote these things down, we believe that he had a sponsor because he addresses his book. He writes the book of Luke and he writes another book that we're gonna get into next Sunday called the book of Acts. He writes these two books together, but he starts them off by addressing his sponsor. He says, excellent Theophilus, I sat down to write an orderly account of the things that happened among us. In other words, these accounts were not written hundreds of years later. These accounts were written while the people who saw these things were still alive. These documents were circulated while the people who could either argue the truth of these things or affirm the truth of these things were still alive. And Luke wrote his document and said, I wanted to set forth an orderly account of the things that happened among us. We believe because Peter, who was always rushing in to follow Jesus, Peter who walked on water, Peter who denied knowing Jesus while Jesus was being tried, Peter wrote down what he saw in two letters. And he affirmed that Jesus Christ was not just his rabbi and his teacher and his friend, but that Jesus Christ was his Lord and his Savior because of the resurrection. And then we believe because James, this is perhaps my favorite, James, the brother of Jesus, declared that Jesus was his Lord. I mean, think about it. What would your brother have to do to convince you that he was your Lord? And James didn't believe that Jesus was his Lord and his God while Jesus was conducting his earthly ministry, while Jesus was teaching and performing miracles. James came to faith after a single event changed his mind about his brother. And that event was the resurrection. And we see that James becomes the pastor, the leader of the church in Jerusalem after he witnesses his brother, who he had seen crucified, risen from the dead. And Paul, who's recorded in history as someone who hates the Christians, who was defending Orthodox Judaism from this new sect and this new belief, Paul, who chases down Christians, who hunts down Christians, who puts them in jail, who oversees their execution, Paul has an encounter with the risen Jesus. And Paul places his hope and his faith in Jesus. And Paul writes over and over and over again how he has hope in Jesus Christ as his Lord. This is why we believe in Jesus. This is why we believe in the resurrection, because first century eyewitnesses who saw it, documented it, and wrote it down for us together. And they wrote these individual documents, and these documents were circulated for hundreds of years. And finally, someone took all of these documents and they bound them together into a single volume. And we get to call that volume the Bible today. But long before there was a Bible, there were Christians who were proclaiming what they had seen. And they were willing to go to their death, not because of what Jesus taught, not because of what they said that Jesus did, but because of what they saw. A dead man walking. Someone who had risen from the dead. the dead. Because to be honest with you, the story of Jesus isn't worth telling apart from the resurrection. Apart from the resurrection, Jesus is just another charismatic, inspirational person who comes onto the scene of history and gets a lot of people stirred up and gives a lot of people, frankly, primarily political hope. Because Israel was a place that was occupied by the Romans at that time, and their greatest hope was that someone would show up and throw off the shackles of Rome, would free them from Roman tyranny. And they saw the Messiah, they saw the ancient prophecies, they saw what had been predicted hundreds of years before through a political lens. But it was the resurrection. It was the resurrection that makes this a story worth telling. Because instead of Jesus just disappearing off the pages of history as another zealot who was crucified by Rome, Jesus persists through history as our Lord and our Savior because of the resurrection. Now, if you're skeptical this morning, we're so glad that you would join us. We're so glad that you would explore this question, who is Jesus with us? And you should count yourself in very, very good company, because on Easter morning, you should know that no one believed in Jesus' resurrection on Easter morning. In fact, the disciples were scattered. They were hiding. They were nowhere to be found. And one of the things that I love about these documents that are recorded for us is that these early believers, these early followers of Jesus, they don't write themselves into the story as heroes. They don't write the story the way that you and I would be tempted to write it. I mean, we would be tempted to write it and say, well, you know, I always knew. I always believed. But they write it and they're honest. And they say that on Easter Sunday morning, they were hiding. Because they knew that whoever had come for Jesus could be coming for them next. And no one was standing outside the tomb on Sunday morning, counting down from 10, 9, 8, here comes Jesus, 7, 6, 5, cue the sun, the stone rolls back, the crowd's waiting, and they all cheer as Jesus comes out, right? That's not how it happened. Instead, they were long gone. They were hiding because nobody expected nobody. They believed what you and I believe about dead people. And when they saw Jesus crucified, when they saw Jesus embalmed, when they saw Jesus placed in a grave and the stone rolled in front, they believed what you and I believed about dead people. That dead people would do what dead people always do, stay dead. But Jesus didn't. Jesus rose again. And our favorite accounts, and the account that we've been looking at for the last 7 weeks here at Access, has been the eyewitness account from Jesus' best friend, John. And John writes down these stories of Jesus, and he records specifically 7 signs or 7 miracles that Jesus performed. But John calls them signs because they were signs that he was sent from God. They are signs that he was, in fact, the Son of God. But John is honest as he records this, as he writes this down for us. And John is older. When he writes this, we believe that the book of John was the last of the Gospels to be written. We believe that all of his friends had passed away. John is in exile on the island of Patmos, and it's the end of his life. And someone maybe perhaps said to him, John, you need to write down, before you're gone, you need to write down what you saw with your own eyes. And so John records for us the story of Jesus, and he records it with an interesting theme that recurs throughout the book of John, that seeing is believing. That when people see what Jesus has done, then they place their faith in him. And so if you're someone who's skeptical this morning, I get it. I get it. Maybe you're saying, if I could just see the miracle, then I would believe. And John records for us and he says, look, I know you can't see the things that I saw, but I want you to see it through my eyes. As a bystander, as someone who witnessed these things, that Jesus Christ is the risen Lord. I had misunderstandings as well. I didn't understand exactly what Jesus had come for. But then the resurrection changed me and changed my life. One of the stories that John records, we talked about last week, is the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. And this is the most dramatic miracle that Jesus performed. All the other miracles kind of lead up to and build up to this. And just a couple of miles from Jerusalem, in the little town of Bethany, Jesus comes to his friends, Mary and Martha, who've just buried their brother Lazarus. And he raises Lazarus from the dead, not just moments or hours after Lazarus has died, but days after Lazarus has been buried. And when people see that, they believe. They believe. Many, many, many believed in him, is what John said. Many people began to believe in Jesus, and the crowds followed him. And at this point, frankly, it wasn't just that many people believed in him, it was that too many people believed in him. And now the religious authorities, the powers that are in place, they are threatened by what they see. And they recognize that Jesus has a charisma. Jesus has a following. Jesus has a crowd. There is an energy around Jesus that threatens the power structure that's in place. And they begin to ask the question, what do we do with this man whom so many people believe in? And they develop a plot. Maybe after Passover, after the crowds have gone back home, they can get Jesus alone. They can get Jesus by himself. They can isolate Jesus and they can arrest Jesus without the crowd pushing back. They can arrest Jesus and they can bring him before Rome. And Rome will have him executed because at this point, Jesus has become so powerful, he's become a threat. And as they're looking for their opportunity, they're waiting for their moment. You know the story. Judas decides he's waited long enough. And Jesus is just, he's not providing the escape, the solution, the answer that Judas is waiting for. And so Judas decides that he is going to betray Jesus. And so he makes a deal with the Pharisees. And the date is set that on the Passover weekend, Judas will tell them when Jesus is isolated, when Jesus is alone, and he will betray his rabbi. Well, on that Passover weekend, Jesus comes into Jerusalem. And hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, turn out to greet him on a day that we have traditionally called Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter, when the crowds turn out by the hundreds, perhaps by the thousands, and they're singing, Hallelujah. They're singing amazing things about Jesus, who's come, they think, to become their political savior. They imagine Jesus riding into Jerusalem and they picture him going straight to Herod's castle and perhaps leading a revolt against Rome, and they're fired up and they're excited. But Jesus doesn't go to Herod's castle. Instead, Jesus goes to the temple and he causes a disturbance in the temple and he begins to upend the way that things were. And then on Passover weekend, Jesus gathers his followers together for one last meal. And it's hard for you and I who didn't grow up with this tradition, perhaps. It's hard for us to really understand the significance that Passover had for the Jewish people. It was a patriotic moment. It was a religious moment. It was a family tradition. It was deeply embedded in them. The Passover was a reflection on how God had protected the Israelite people 1,400 years before. And for 1,400 years, they had practiced this sacred tradition of taking unleavened bread and taking juice and remembering how God had protected them by the blood of the Lamb. And Jesus, in that moment, He does something that we just, it's so hard for us to imagine what a big deal this was. But Jesus takes that moment and he says, this tradition that's been going on for 1400 years, it's going to have a new meaning because there's going to be a new covenant. And this new meaning is about me, because this bread is going to represent my body that is broken for you. And the blood is going to represent a new covenant that is brought in, that is ushered in through my shed blood. A new covenant. And this covenant will have a new command. And the command is simply love one another. It's not nearly as complicated as all the old rules. It's very simple, but it's going to be very, very difficult. And in fact, if you can pull this off, it is how people will know that you are my followers, that you love one another as I have loved you. And then the next day, he pulled off a demonstration of love that would take their breath away. And Jesus, in the garden, is arrested. And he's taken before the high priest, and then the high priest takes him before Pilate. And Pilate sends him to Herod. He doesn't want to be responsible for it. Herod doesn't want to be responsible, sends him back to Pilate. And finally, Pilate says, maybe if I have him beaten, maybe if I have him flogged within an inch of his life, the crowd will be satisfied. And so he has Jesus flogged and beaten, and he brings out the beaten and bloody Jesus. And he stands him before the crowd and he says, this man has done no wrong. And he thinks the crowd might have mercy once they see Jesus bloodied and beaten. And the crowd says, crucify him. Crucify him. And so then, John tells us, the soldiers took charge of Jesus, and carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull. And there, they crucified him. Not a lot of detail, because in the first century, anyone reading this would have seen the aftermath of a crucifixion. They would have known what an awful way to die this was. John says they crucified him, and with two others, one on each side and Jesus in the middle. He always gives us such great detail. And then John goes on and he talks about how he's standing there and he's watching not just his friend die, not just his rabbi die, but all of his hope is dying before his eyes. And as John's standing there and he's watching Jesus die, he must have thought, okay, God, this would be a really good time for a miracle. Okay, God, like right now, you can still pull it off, God. Do something amazing. Jesus, do something amazing right now. Jesus knew that this wasn't the time. Jesus instructs John to take care of his mother, Mary. And then Jesus bows his head. And he gives up his spirit. And in that moment, it's all over for John, for Peter, for Andrew, for James, for all of those who follow Jesus. It's all over. Because a Messiah, the Son of God, can't die. If Jesus was who he claimed to be. And you have to understand, what made Jesus remarkable was not what Jesus taught, and it wasn't what Jesus did. It is what Jesus claimed about himself, that he was the Son of God. And the Son of God can't die. And so if Jesus has died, if Jesus has been crucified, then Jesus is not a good teacher. In fact, maybe that's a place that you've landed. Maybe you said, you know what? I'm not sure that I can believe that Jesus rose from the dead. I'm not sure that I can believe that Jesus is the Son of God, but I'm willing to admit that Jesus is a good teacher. You cannot believe that Jesus is a good teacher, because Jesus taught that he was the Son of God, which puts him in the camp of either a liar or a lunatic without the resurrection. but not a good teacher. Misguided, deluded, perhaps. Intentionally deceptive, perhaps. But not a good teacher. And so in that moment, when Jesus gives up his spirit, their hope has died as well. And John says, I want you to know that the man who saw it, he's talking about himself in the third person, the man who saw it has given his testimony, and his testimony is true. I want you to know that this is true, that this is what I saw, this is what I witnessed with my own eyes. And it's so important that you know this. It is so important that you believe this because he knows that he tells the truth and he testifies so that, this is why I tell you this. This is why it is so important that you know that what I'm telling you is what I saw. I know it's hard to believe. I didn't believe it myself in that moment, but I'm telling you this so that you may also believe. This is why I wrote this, because seeing is believing. And you're thinking, hey, I believe. At this point, I believe, right? I believe that Jesus was a good teacher. I believe Jesus was crucified. John says, no, it's not that. It's what happens next. It's what happens next that I need you to believe. And what happens next is going to be hard to believe, and it was difficult for us to believe as well, but you must believe what happens next. He continues with some detail. He says, later, Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body. He's very specific so that if you're reading this in the first century and you're doubtful, you can go and ask these people yourself, is this what happened? And he says he asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. And with Pilate's permission, he came and took the body away. And he was accompanied by Nicodemus. Nicodemus, who we haven't seen since John's book, chapter 3. Nicodemus, who came to Jesus in the middle of the night. Nicodemus, who Jesus said, you have to be born again. So Nicodemus, he shows up again, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night, and Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds, because they wanted to make sure that Jesus' body was treated properly. Why? Because his body was dead. And so they take Jesus' body, the two of them, and they wrap it with the spices and the strips of linen in accordance with Jewish burial customs. And at the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, there was a new tomb, which no one had ever been laid. This was important. It's a fulfillment of ancient prophecy. And because it was the Jewish day of preparation, in other words, it's the day right before the Sabbath, because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. And then, with no hope, the disciples disband. Because they know that the same authorities that came for Jesus could be coming for them next. And so they flee, they hide. And there is a day called Silent Saturday. It is that day when there is no hope. When everything that they thought was true, everything that they held dear, was dead and buried. And early on Sunday morning, just as the sun was beginning to break the horizon, which would have meant the end of Passover, very early, there's a banging on the door. There's a pounding on the door. And perhaps at first they think it's the Roman soldiers that have finally found them and come for them, but then they realize the Roman soldiers wouldn't knock. They would just kick the door in and take them away. And so they go to the door and they answer the door. And there's Mary Magdalene, who Jesus had rescued, whom Jesus had done some amazing things for. Jesus had seen her not as a category, not as one of a group of people called women, but instead as an individual, the way Jesus saw every person, and he valued her as an individual, and he honored her as an individual. And Mary Magdalene's life had been changed by Jesus. And she's standing there at the door, and she's crying, and she's scared. She doesn't know what's going on. She's confused. And she says to them, they have taken. We don't know who the they is, but they, certainly not us, not someone who's on our side. They have taken the Lord out of the tomb and we don't know where they've put him. She's despaired because she wants to pay tribute to Jesus and someone has stolen his body. So Peter and the other disciple, again, John speaking of himself in the third person. So Peter and the other disciple, which is John, they start for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter. I just think that's kind of fun. John's like, hey, Peter's gone. He's not here, you know, to be offended by this. But I just want you to be clear. I can outrun Peter, all right? It'd be like, you know, if I ever outrun Kevin Bell or Court Neal or some of the really fast guys that I see running around my neighborhood, I would tell you. I would want you to know. So Peter's like, or John's like, I outran Peter and I reached the tomb first. But, and then he's honest about the story. He bent over and he looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but he did not go in. Now, why would John not have gone in? Because it's dark and it's a tomb. And he's like, I'll just kind of watch from here. But then Simon Peter comes along and Peter goes straight into the tomb. And why did Peter go straight into the tomb? Because he's Simon Peter. Because this is the way Peter does it. And he rushes in and there he saw the strips of linen lying there as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. Do you understand? This isn't like, if someone had stolen the body, they would have just taken the whole body. They wouldn't have taken the time or the effort to disembalm the body. But he gives this detail because it's important for us to understand that this is not chaos that they find. This is an orderly event. Because the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head was still laying in its place, separate from the linen. It's like peace and order has come to this place. And then finally, the other disciple, John, who's writing this, John, who'd reached the tomb first, also went inside. And he saw. And he saw, he continues this formula that we see throughout John's writings. He continues this formula of seeing and believing. John saw and believed. John saw and believed. And we can only imagine everything that is washing over John and Peter in that moment and all that they are thinking. They're thinking, Who could imagine so great a mercy? What heart could fathom such boundless grace? Because now the reality of the resurrection is hitting them. And now they recognize that miracle that they were hoping for in Jesus' final moments on the cross, the miracle that they thought they missed the window for, the miracle had happened. And it had happened in even a more powerful way than they could have imagined when Jesus was hanging on the cross. Because now Jesus Christ has taken on our sin and shame. The God of ages has stepped down from glory to wear my sin and bear my shame. And in that moment, they recognize his death on the cross was necessary to pay the price for my sin and my shame. And the resurrection on Easter Sunday morning, the resurrection didn't just free Jesus. You see, Jesus didn't need to conquer death. Jesus is God. Death has never been a threat to Jesus. Death has never been a threat to God. Death is a threat to you and I. And when Jesus rose from the dead, he conquered death, not on his own behalf, but on your behalf and my behalf. And so they begin to tell everyone that they know, and they begin to tell everyone they see that Jesus Christ has risen from the dead. Now Thomas, one of the 12, he wasn't with the disciples when Jesus came. So the disciples told him, Thomas, we've seen, and so we believe, we've seen the Lord. And Thomas, he says, hey, I've been down this road. I had all my hope in Jesus. I had all my faith in Jesus. I had all my future in Jesus. And I've been brokenhearted and disappointed once. not going to happen again. Maybe that's been your experience in church. Maybe that's been your experience with faith. Maybe your guard is up because you think, no. I've been let down before. It's not going to happen again. And a week later, he says to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and I put my finger where the nails are and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. I'm not going down that road again. But a week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. This is very specific. It's very detailed. They're in the house together. And John's writing this, and John's saying, look, I can imagine that he's seen us through the ages as he writes this. And he's thinking, this is going to be hard for them to believe. But you guys have to believe that I'm writing this as I saw it. I'm writing this as I experienced it. You have to believe. I know this is crazy, but I'm just telling you. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them. He stood among us in this room where the doors were locked. And he said, peace be to you. And do you know why he said, peace be to you? Because we were all yelling, wah! The doors were locked and Jesus just walked in. And he said to Thomas, I love this. Jesus singles out the skeptic. Jesus singles out the doubter. Jesus addresses you and all of your questions about who is Jesus. And Jesus comes and he says, Thomas, put your finger here. Thomas, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it to my side. And then he says this, and this is such a beautiful way to say it. He says, don't be unbelieving, but believing. You've seen. Don't be unbelieving, but believing. And by the way, Thomas, none of these other guys believed until they saw either. So Thomas, don't let them give you a nickname someday. Don't let anybody ever call you doubting Thomas, because they were all doubting. I know they were doubting, because when I came out of the tomb, nobody was waiting for me. So they're all doubting, Thomas, not just you. I understand you have questions. I understand you need to know who is Jesus. And I'm standing before you to answer that question for you in the most personal way that I can possibly answer it. And Thomas says, well, I know this one. I know this one. I know this one, Jesus. I know who you are. My Lord and my God. If you've ever thought that Jesus never claimed to be God, here's your moment. Thomas says to him, my Lord and my God. And anyone who had been raised in the Jewish faith knew that that was blasphemy. That not only was that punishable by death for Jesus, but punishable by death for Thomas and everyone else in the room, unless it were true. Unless Jesus was in fact his Lord and his God. And then Jesus says to him, Thomas, because you've seen me, you have believed. And then Jesus, while he's in the room with his followers, I believe he looks over their heads and through the pages of history to you and to me today. And what Jesus says next is about you and about me. And he says, blessed are those who've not yet seen. Blessed are those who've not seen and yet have believed. Why would they believe if they've not seen? Because they've seen the impact. They've seen the result. They've seen what faith has done in the lives of those around them. They've seen and they've heard the testimony of those who said, Jesus Christ has changed my life. Jesus Christ has risen from the dead. Jesus Christ is the resurrection, and he is the the life. Because no man can say, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and then be buried unless he comes back to life. And he came back to life to give you life and to give me life today. That in that morning, his buried body began to breathe. And out of the silence that the disciples thought would go on forever, the silence that they thought was permanent, the roaring lion declared, the grave has no claim on me or you. And when he came out of that grave, he sealed the promise for you and I. And John wraps up his book by saying this, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. I haven't had time to include them all, but these are written. These signs, these stories, they are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. That by believing, you may have life in his name. And I think as John is writing these final words, he's remembering back to the earlier chapter, chapter 3 of his book, when Jesus is speaking with Nicodemus, and Jesus says, for God so loved the world, for God so loved you, that he gave his one and only Son to be the hope and the promise and the future of the world. That anyone, not just the Jewish people, but that anyone who believes would not be separated from God forever, would not perish, would not be distant from God, but instead could have life and have life eternal. You can have that life today. You can believe today. If you've placed your faith in Jesus, I want you to stand with us today. If you're doing that for the very first time today, I want you to stand and declare that I believe that Jesus Christ is my Lord and my God. If you've already done that, if you've placed your faith in Jesus a long time ago, I want you to stand and I want you to sing with us that Jesus Christ is my living hope. Will you sing that with us today? Will you stand together with us? And will you sing as we declare that Jesus Christ is our living hope?